Political Philosophy is a Morin Academy podcast. If you'd like to learn more about the Morin Academy, you can sign up for our free newsletter. I've put the link in the show notes below. But today, I wanted to continue with my series on Eric Voegelin's Science, Politics, and Gnosticism. And today, we're going to zero in on the chapter concerning the death of God. This is an idea and a term that is used by philosophers and that is often misunderstood by the general public. And so I want to spend a good deal of time on it today and try to explain how Voegelin uses it, right or wrong. So Voegelin refers to it as the murder of God, because I think he wants to emphasize his view that this is an intentional act or an intentional move on the part of certain philosophers and even on the part of the societies that are influenced by them. It's in part one, almost all the way through part one. There's a note on Hegel's philosophy of world history, but I'm not going to really deal with that because I don't know as it just doesn't seem to me like Voegelin understands Hegel or Marx, and maybe as well as he should. I'll get into that a bit in a second. But whether he does or not doesn't really obviate the fact that we can learn from his perspective, because like a lot of philosophers, he uses these people to make his own points, rightly or wrongly. So you can still get his perspective, regardless of how he sort of mishandles Marx in particular. I guess I would say Voegelin has a overly simplistic reading of Marx that very much taps into Marx's early writings. He overemphasizes Hegel as a result in his understanding of Marx. And so I'm just not going to talk about that anymore because it's really not worth going into more detail. So anyway, setting that aside, we'll start with this. Just a few quotes to kind of remind you of Voegelin's overall viewpoint before we get into the murder of God. He says, "Philosophy springs from the love of being. It is man's loving endeavor to perceive the order of being and attune himself to it. Gnosis, by contrast, desires dominion over being. In order to seize control of being, the Gnostic constructs his system. The building of systems is a Gnostic form of reasoning, not a philosophic one." Right there, you get a great deal of what Voegelin is trying to get across in this little book. Philosophy, he says, springs from a love of being, and Gnosis, or Gnostic thinking, desires dominion over being. So one is approaching being and truth from this sort of, you might say, almost a courting type of behavior, right? Where it exists and the philosopher is to approach it and to come closer to it and gain fuller understanding of it, realizing that there's no way to fully grasp it because it's larger than the human mind. Okay. Gnosis, on the other hand, and he's not talking, yes, he like draws from early Gnostic movements, but I don't think he's holding really true to even, that interpretation of Gnosticism. He's using it the way that he wants to. And for him, he's defining it as trying to construct a system that will allow human beings to control being, to control truth. And you can see right there, since he's a Catholic thinker, even though that doesn't get emphasized a great deal in his thought, or at least I shouldn't say that, it doesn't get emphasized a great deal in the way that he communicates. But in between the lines here, we can see that he sees Gnosticism as a revolt against God. So it's an overturning of the relationship between human beings and the higher truth, the order of being. So the building of a system is not really the same thing as philosophy. And a system is what modern thinkers want to build in order to gain control over nature, over being, a nature that they feel is hostile, chaotic, that human beings have to tame. All right. So that's one big thought that comes out here. Here's another quote. An essential connection exists between the suppression of questions and the construction of a system. Whoever reduces being to a system cannot permit questions that invalidate systems as a form of reasoning. So sort of inherent in building the modern system isn't certain ideologies. Like I would not, I mean, he zeroes in on Marxism, but I would also say neoliberal capitalism is just as dogmatic. There, you know, any ideology that human beings create that's claims to encompass everything, right, that we need to know in order to make our lives better, suppresses questions, says, this is what Voegelin is saying, that it comes with the deal or the bargain, which he would say is a Faustian bargain, that you just can't ask certain questions. And those questions generally have to do with being itself, which, I mean, to use plain language, be things like, why are we here? What's the purpose of life? Is there a God? And so on. And then he says, the aim of parousiastic, as opposed to chiliastic, those are my words, Gnosticism is to destroy the order of being, which is experienced as defective and unjust, and through man's creative power to replace it with a perfect and just order. The parousiastic means imminent, more or less, means a type of Gnosticism, a type of system building that sees the potential to make everything right and perfect in this world. That's what he means by imminent, okay? This world. Modern ideologies they claim that we can create a perfect world here and now, whereas earlier forms of Gnosticism put that off. That's the chiliastic Gnosticism, put that off into the next life, basically waiting for, you know, the apocalypse or the millennial moment or something like that. Okay. So that is the particular characteristic of modern Gnosticism from his point of view, is that it attempts to create a system that brings human perfection and absolute control over our world right now. Okay. Now the shade of Nietzsche starts coming in here. Okay, so Voegelin says, in order that the attempt to create a world may seem to make sense, the givenness of the order of being must be obliterated. The order of being must be interpreted rather as essentially under man's control, and taking control of being further requires that the transcendent order of being be obliterated. It requires the decapitation of being, the murder of God. So Voegelin is saying here very clearly now, being equals God. Mm-hmm. In his view, when you stop asking, when you prohibit the questions concerning the ultimate meaning, the ultimate reality of our world, you have closed off speculation about God, and in effect, you have then murdered God. And he says the murder of God is committed speculatively in reasoning by explaining divine being as the work of man. That means, in other words, that move, for instance, that Marx makes through Feuerbach, where he basically accepts the idea that human beings create God, create religion. It's a psychological move in order to try to gain some sort of, coping mechanism, some relief from anxiety, seeming control over their situation. But it's a desperate move in his mind, when we could be actually and will, in his view, be solving our economic problems. All right. So again, Voegelin uses the term murder, because as we've seen from previous sections, he thinks that this move, at least on the part of thinkers like Marx and Nietzsche, is intentional. And again, I will say he leaves out liberalism and capitalist economics, and that is, in my view, a pure prejudice, I hate to say, because they do the same sort of thing, right? Neoliberal, or before it, liberal ideology, does the same sort of thing. In reality, it really does. And more so as time has gone by. And that's what so many of us don't want to acknowledge. So, but that's a big theme on this channel. We have to understand that. This is how the murder is accomplished. And the reason particularly why it's murder is because he thinks it's intentional. Now, I would say I disagree with him on Marx. I do think he's right, though, about Nietzsche, and I don't think Nietzsche would object at all to that as well. Like Nietzsche was, that was a big theme of his thought, was that he was perfectly aware of what he was doing. And in a desperate move to gain control and to sort of find meaning within a world in which he believed that God was not a plausible explanation. Nietzsche could see the pit of nihilism, the pit of despair, you might say, looming in front of human beings, looming in front of himself. And he decided to, for his philosophy, to kind of try to bridge that, to leap over that pit, and to, in effect, see what human beings could do, the best human beings, in his view, could do to create their own world. And so Voegelin, then he turns to Nietzsche very explicitly here, and he quotes Nietzsche, I think fairly effectively, since I think he's right about Nietzsche. Nietzsche says, for instance, "Alas, my brothers, that God whom I created was human work and human madness like all gods." So just a quote of, you know, from Nietzsche's perspective, that God was created by humans like all gods. And then another quote, and sorry about the typo there. "If there were a God," he says, "how could I endure not being a God? Therefore, there are no gods." And so Nietzsche, again, is expressing this idea that the human being has this instinctual desire for power and mastery, right? Or at least the best humans. I think, he would argue all do, just some are capable of this much more so than others. But, there's this inherent desire to be master and to not have anything above you. This is, from the Christian perspective, this is like the Garden of Eden moment of original sin, right? But from Nietzsche's perspective, it's just, it's the valid instinctual life force within people that resents having to be repressed in some way, to being controlled. And therefore, this is the origin of the assertion, there are no gods. Now, here's where I have to say, when whether it's Voegelin or Nietzsche discussing the death of God or the murder of God, there's no implication that they are saying that some metaphysical entity existed and then it didn't exist. They're not talking about the birth, life, and death of Christ in particular. They're not referring to a real metaphysical entity. I believe that, of course, Nietzsche didn't think something like God ever did exist. Okay. So when they refer to the death of God, they are referring to a change in the ideas, mentality, reasoning power, perceptions, worldview of human beings, okay? Even Voegelin is, even though I think Voegelin would assert there is a metaphysical entity called God. But where they would agree is the death of God is nothing more than a human perspective, a human act. It doesn't mean, in Voegelin's case, it doesn't mean that somehow human beings actually killed God. Again, he's not referring to Christ here. He's referring to an attitude towards God, a rejection of God, a denial of God's existence. And so is Nietzsche. Okay. Nietzsche's not going to bother with metaphysics on this issue. Voegelin then taps into Jewish mysticism and refers to the golem legends of the Kabbalah. And I don't know much about Jewish mysticism, and I'm not going to pretend to know very much about this. So I'm going to try to relate what he says about it and draw out the lesson that he's trying to provide us. But pardon me if I don't do justice to this. Okay. Sometimes Voegelin gets into areas that are quite mystical and mysterious. And I think this is part of the challenge of reading Voegelin. But he starts out comparing the creation of socialist man to the creation of a golem. So I think that's a key to the larger point that he wants to make. Again, I think he's hammering too much on the socialists, but he's trying to say, you know, socialists try to create this new man that's kind of like their ideal, you know, image. You know, think the Leninist period in the Soviet Union and even the Stalinist period, right, where they had, you know, this ideal that was often depicted on their murals of the strapping, you know, completely like loyal, you know, worker who was out there just building up the infrastructure of the Soviet Union and so on. So anyway, like he's saying there's something artificial about that because the golem is something that is created by a magician from an inert materials that supposedly is brought to life. And so the implication is that we are dealing with a type of magic or magical thinking when we create systems of perfection like socialist man, all right? And I would argue neoliberal order as well. So anyway, cut to the chase here. The magician or adept Jeremiah creates a first golem, about the first golem that Jeremiah created. He says, "What does the golem do, bearing like Adam, the man whom God created, the seal of the truth on its forehead? It erases the letter Aleph in order to warn the adepts that the truth is God's. The second truth is death. The golem dies." So the golem once created actually warns its master, its creator, that it is not the truth, or that it is not God, and that they are not God. I think that is more accurate. And then it dies. But then Jeremiah, for whatever reason, attempts to create a second golem. And the second golem that he creates doesn't die. It continues to live. And it also erases the letter Aleph, and the sign on its head turns from God is truth to God is dead. And then, according to Voegelin, the legend says Jeremiah then must kill the golem because he realizes that this has an unnatural thing that cannot continue to exist. All right. Now, I think what happened there is that Voegelin just sees a correspondence between the truth that this golem legend is trying to convey in Jewish mysticism and what he is trying to convey. And so I think there's a contrast that Voegelin wants to make here, which is that the adept Jeremiah understood still that there is this higher truth that, and of being that human beings cannot usurp and cannot fully control, and that the golem is this unnatural thing which represents that and is something to destroy, right? Whereas the modern position represented by Nietzsche is that one must overcome one's distaste for the golem, so to speak. And overcome one's sense that it is unnatural or that there's something wrong about this and should move on to owning the murder of God. In other words, to fully embrace and not look back from this move to create ourselves and the world around us. That's the bigger picture, right? The golem represents the wisdom of the older, you know, the older like societies and traditions that say, you know, the Tower of Babel story would be another example that says, you know, when people try to do this, it's unnatural, it's wrong, it's ugly, it doesn't work, it needs to be destroyed. And in modern thought represented by Nietzsche, it's no, we need to power through that disgust. We need to power through the sickness in our stomach that we feel from taking that step and move on. Now, that might be something in our world like genetic engineering too, but Voegelin's kind of hung up on the creation of ideological systems. But there's a lot of ways you could use this general insight to think about our world. All right. So the golem legend has it, who murders God will himself become a god. And Voegelin says the warning of the parable in the second golem legend is that the parable is warning and is so understood by the adepts in the legend because man cannot become God. If he tries in the process of self-idolization, he will become a demon, willfully shutting himself off from God. All right, so we see Voegelin's motivation here is primarily, I think, a defense of God and a defense of belief in God. I think that was a lot of what he was really about. There are other ways in addition to that that one can use this way of thinking. Simply if we think about the limits of what human beings can do and the fact that oftentimes when people try to push back against those seemingly natural limits, they get something that's unnatural and ultimately self-destructive. One could make that argument apart from a theistic position, you might say. But, you know, here we have like a picture of Joseph Stalin with his perfect, like Soviet child, robust, kind of blonde, it looks like, with a beautiful hammer and sickle flag and some flowers from the countryside. This is the Soviet ideal that was put out there. That would be, in Voegelin's view, a little baby cute golem. Voegelin says, man cannot transform himself into a superman. That's a reference to Nietzsche, the Übermensch. Man cannot transform himself into a superman. The attempt to create a superman is an attempt to murder man. So there he's, why is that? Because man, from Voegelin's perspective, is inherently something that exists between the transcendent and the mundane, between God and the world. We are, by our nature, in our psychological and spiritual state, in between, and that is our nature. So if we attempt to murder God and transform into this superman, create this system and this life that of perfection that's everything that we need, then we are, in effect, not only murdering God, he says, but murdering man, because the two go hand in hand from his perspective. Historically, he says, the murder of God is not followed by the superman, but by the murder of man. The deicide of the Gnostic theoreticians is followed by the homicide of the revolutionary practitioners. Here a reference to the fact that, you know, for instance, Stalin, you know, his regime, you know, responsible for the murder of millions and millions of people, or the starvation deaths and murder of millions of people, a disaster that no Marxist would deny, no Marxist in our modern world with any sense would deny. And again, he's going after the Marxist. One could certainly look at the Nazis. One could certainly look at neoliberal capitalism in its own way, responsible for a horrendous number of human casualties. Even if a person is somewhat turned off by all the God language here and the mysticism, there is still an insight here to be gained which is that, you know, he's attempting to answer, why is it that people can do these just absolutely horrendous things? And it is in the name of this vision and the creation of the system that will, you know, fix all the problems and bring heaven to earth, right? To use his fancy language, the immanentization of the eschaton, right? The bringing heaven to earth. Whereas in reality, though, both systems of thinking that involve, the elimination of private property or the use of private property can be thought in a way that is not absolutist and that does not lead to these types of disasters. And I think I really want to emphasize that, that thinkers like Voegelin and people who are attracted to thinkers like Voegelin tend to say, he's certainly condemning Marxism and all things socialist. Or I could apply this to capitalism and everything having to do with private property. And therefore it's just evil and we should not think about it further. Well, we could not think our way into absolute paralysis, which is, I believe, where we're at the moment, just by this type of absolute rejection of options. So it's one thing to acknowledge how horrendously we can go wrong by pursuing absolute perfection. It's another thing, though, to just absolutely reject all information that one can gain from ways of living and ways of thinking coming from, say, socialism and capitalism, or liberalism and capitalism. We need to be able to just think clearly. And there are many ideas from these ways of thinking, these ideological systems, that are actually really insightful. Certainly the Marxist critique of capitalism is really insightful and largely correct in my view, even if the actual historical, you know, expression of Marxism in the Soviet Union was really, really bad. No one's denying that. When people basically say it's evil, I don't want to think about it, for instance, when it comes to Marxist economics or capitalist thinking on private property, they're doing the same thing Voegelin is condemning. They're precluding questions. They're not allowing certain thoughts in. And that is representative of a type of nature that he says is not philosophic, but Gnostic, because it's a desperate attempt to try to control everything in your world. So if you're shutting out information, if you're not willing to open your mind enough to think outside of the little parameters that you've established for your truth, then you're not really thinking. And if you're not really thinking, you're not able to solve problems. So this is one of the big lessons that I take away from the Voegelin perspective, even though he probably wouldn't even agree with all that, because he himself was stuck in a sort of anti-communist mindset that was so very, loomed so very large in his thought that he couldn't apply his own thinking to other areas, it seems. Okay, I haven't read everything he ever wrote. Obviously, I'm just beginning to delve into Voegelin a bit, but just from what I have read, it doesn't seem like he's able to do that, but we can. So anyway, I will probably spend one more episode on this, and it would be about the last section of the book called Ersatz Religion, the Gnostic Mass Movements of Our Time.